problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.
I'm sure your dad has a huge heart. Probably has a big old schlonger as well, huh? Does he?
Oh, yeah. Dad dicks? Maybe. Dad dicks are huge, man. Yes. And from all the stories I've heard about your dad?
Forget it.
That's a monster.
Totally.
It's a monster just trapped in denim.
Really, I still remember the first dad dick I saw. Uh-huh. Yeah, I was 7 years old. It was at a Warriors game. We were at one of those horse troughs.
Oh, God.
And I'm like...
Howling next to you. Yeah. And that's the thing. Dad's dicks in the late 80s, early 90s, right. They were bigger.
Yep.
I think there's something shrieking dad dicks. That should be on 2020. Yeah.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
Hey, it's Kevin Nealon, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Yeah.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on RadioSt.Pete.com. My name is Will Koontz, host of this here program that you can hear every Sunday, 6:15 p.m. Maybe you're tuning in then, or Mondays, 10:15 p.m., or for you early risers, which is nobody, of course, because nobody's up at 4:15 unless you're addicted to a drug, probably cocaine or methamphetamines. You don't see many pill heads up at 4:15. But there probably are some. I mean, maybe they're winding down their evening. I don't know. Probably like Adderall, maybe, too, if you're studying. If you're a college kid, you might be up at 4:15. I remember I used to stay up. This wasn't even that long ago, really. I used to be a super night owl. And I know that when you turn 30, it's just a number, of course. Everybody knows that. It's not what age you are. It's, how old you feel. But I also think there is something to becoming an older person, because once I hit 30, I am in bed usually before midnight now, and usually asleep by 1. I used to be up until 3:30, 4 in the morning, and then go to work the next day and be totally fine. Now, that doesn't happen very often. I mean, there are exceptions to that rule. You know, occasionally I can do that, but not every night. I used to get a lot of work done at night, which I kind of miss. I heard there's, I can't remember his name, forget it. But one of those really smart guys would stay up until like 4:30 in the morning. I think a lot of them did, actually. I think that's a pretty common occurrence. Geniuses stay up late, which is probably why I go to bed early now, because I am stupid. That could explain a lot. We got a lot going on here at HMB Radio. Of course, you can catch... It's podcast galore over at HMB Radio. It's mine you can get if you subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. If you search hashtag HMB Radio, you can get the Homemade Broadcast. You can get the HMB Sides, which are uncut, uncensored, extra content, web exclusive, podcast exclusive. You got James Bailey's My Mom's Favorite Podcast, which is a show that gets released weekly where he talks to someone, usually a comedian. But he's had other people on, too. kind of does a similar thing, but he smokes substances and talks to people, which I don't know how he does, frankly, but he manages to pull it off. I guess he's kind of in that culture, though. I'm not anymore. So I don't know how he even functions, but he does a whole podcast, and it's like 2 hours, most of these things. I don't know what you'd have to say to somebody for 2 hours. After this 45 minutes and sometimes a little bit of extended time, I'm like, time to go. We don't have anything to talk about anymore. And then we're recording the first Funny Pricks, which is Kyle Roos's new podcast, which he's a comic in the area, but he's also a tattoo artist, and he's been doing that for a long time. So he is going to be recording a show with us. I don't know if it's weekly, monthly, what, but we're recording that Thursday. So that should be out probably either this weekend, or maybe I might hold it off till the end of next week. But you can keep up to date on hmbradio.com or facebook.com/hmbradio, and be sure to follow the show on Twitter. Well, it's basically me. I don't like the separate Twitter accounts for shows. Just have your Twitter account and just put your stuff out there. I don't know why people do that. I'm not following your personal account and then following your show account. Sorry, not doing it. I'm sure you're devastated, by the way. But it's just a personal thing that I have. And if you want, you can leave a voicemail or text message for us if you'd like at 813-693-2124. If you ever are in the mood to do that, if you want to talk to Bailey, Kyle, myself, anyone really on the network, that would be how to do it. This show is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, right here in St. Pete. Excuse me. Usually I can muffle those. That one came through. Sorry about that. You had to hear me burp right in your face. Suck it. Yes, Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, slybar.com. Check out the open mic there every second and fourth Tuesday of the month. This is, I'm kind of in a weird mood, and I think I know why, is because I, during the week now with recording these podcasts and everything, I'm working my regular day job and then working these, I guess they're pretty much just hobbies at this point. What can you say? I mean, I get a little something here and there, but this is mostly a passion project for me. So I'm working evenings as soon as I come home, but the great thing about that is the weekend's here. Like, right, I mean, it's Tuesday already. I feel like I just got, and it's the end of Tuesday when I'm recording this. Heading to Sly Bar right after this. Wednesday, we're recording two podcasts. Thursday, recording Kyle's podcast. And then we have Yard of Ale, too, which is our new weekly open mic with John Jacobs at Cigar City Comedy. So that is, I don't remember the address for Yard of Ale. It's downtown St. Pete. It's on this, hold on, I gotta look it up, sorry. It's 260 First Avenue North. That one's a late open mic. That one's from 10 to midnight, but it's fun. It's a different crowd than Sly Bar, but it's pretty much chicks, like hot chicks that go there, and then dudes that try to engage those said hot chicks. So they're not really trying to hear a comedy, but it's a fun atmosphere because usually we'll have a few drunk people stumble in and initially try to heckle us, and then they end up having a great time. So check that out. That is weekly every Thursday, 260 First Ave North, right here in St. Petersburg, and Sly Bar every second and fourth Tuesday. Slybar.com. Did I say that already? Yes. Working on a few other sponsorships, too. It's hard to get money out of people, believe it or not. Fathom that, right? It's tough, but we got hopefully some coming. I don't know. We'll see. I'm waiting for a credit card from one person and haven't gotten it yet. It's been a few days, so we shall see. So my guest this week is, he's a comedian in the area. He's kind of new to comedy, but I mean, I think he's actually pretty new to the area, too, as a matter of fact. But he is also the producer of one of my favorite programs in the Tampa Bay area, the Mike Calta Show. Rob Gargulio, I believe his name is. And I must admit, I haven't even really heard the show since it moved to mornings because I'm just not up that early. So Rob is here. Rob, welcome, my friend.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I said your name wrong in the intro.
That's okay. Most people butcher it.
Gargulio. Gargiulo.
Yes.
Okay, got it now.
Don't
say
worry.
It three times, and then I'm good to go.
Yeah.
That's how I usually do it.
If you spell it out, I spell out phonetically. Phonetically?
Phonetically.
G-A-R-J-E-W-L-O-W.
That's how I put it down here.
Jewel.
I thought it was Gargiulo.
No, I think my grandma, when she got real senile and old, she started saying that it was, and then she would argue with my dad that we didn't say the name the proper way, which was weird because she was, like, pooping in her pants and stuff and then arguing about how my dad was wrong about things. But
yeah, that's a really Goomba name, if that would have been it. I was like, man.
Yeah, but I don't look Italian. I look
You kind of look like a white supremacist.
Yeah, well, yeah, when my head is shaved, like, my hair kind of is growing out right now, so there's, like, a slight stubble. So it just looks weird because it doesn't grow in everywhere. So to make it look not weird, I have to shave it, but then I look like a racist, and it's not a good look to walk around anywhere with a bald
general.
Head and a long ISIS beard.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, at least you could fit in anywhere, you know. At least that's the case. So, Rob, you're a comic in the area, and, of course, you're a producer of the Mike Calta Show, which is one of my favorite programs here in the area.
Cool.
I will be honest, though. I haven't since I moved to mornings. It's been a little tough.
I started listening when they were on in afternoons because I worked in mornings, and that's how I became aware of them because I knew they were hiring, and I saw an ad for their job. And I would listen every afternoon from 3 to 7. I would go out of my way. And that's when I knew it was like, hey, I want to go work for this dude because it's such a good show that after getting done working on the radio, I would go out of my way to listen to more radio.
Right.
And just to listen to his show, I would go out of my way to listen for 4 hours a day to listen from start to finish. So it's a fun show to be a part of, and I'm glad I'm down here.
Where is their radio jobs posted?
AllAccess.com will post them a lot. Yeah, you should check out All Access. There used to be... Greater Media, if you go to Greater Media, they also list their jobs. There's a whole bunch that I used to go through every day. That's the terrible part about radio is that there are so few jobs, and then it's so difficult to get that job because there's so many people you're competing with. So it's a brutal industry.
Yeah. It seems like it's only getting tougher, too. I mean, I don't know what it was like. You're probably not that old, though.
No, I started – my first day on the air was January 8th, 2008, professionally, where I was working. I wasn't getting paid, but I was interning for a major a show called The Kid Chris Show, which was on 94 WISP in Philadelphia. And it was a station I grew up listening to as a kid, which was cool because I would listen to Howard Stern in the morning, and they had the best rock and roll afterwards. And – it was cool to go and intern there, and I worked for free for there for about a year, and then I started working there, and then we all got fired, but I worked there for a little bit, and then I got my first paying radio job in South Jersey working small market radio until I worked my way up out of small market to Cleveland, Ohio, and then from Cleveland to here, so...
Did you start out, were you like in school, like an internship? Because you can't just intern, right?
No, that's pretty much the only reason why I went to college. I went originally to do psychology, and I started doing high school radio when I was a senior in high school, and it was so much fun. I would go in, and my first period class was radio broadcasting, so it was homeroom. So everybody got a turn to do a 10-minute air shift for homeroom every morning, and then during the actual class, everybody would get a turn to go in. So I would go in early just so I could get 10 minutes before homeroom with the teacher because she knew that I was like a dork about it and I loved it. And I went to college for 2 years and I was too scared to go on the radio because I thought people were listening and they weren't. It was a college radio station. You couldn't pick up the radio station inside the college, but we treated it like it was a real job. When I started going, we would get there Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. I would make sure that the guys that I was with, I would go and pull. I remember pulling my buddy out of his apartment window because he was on the first floor on campus at apartments, and I was like, hey, it's 5:55. Our show starts at 6. For who? Nobody was listening, but I took it very serious, and that led to getting an internship. You had to be in college to get your foot in the door at that time. Now you can do it doing promotions, you know, working your way through other ways. But at that time, there weren't a lot of promotions jobs out there. The only jobs that you really could get were internships, and that turned into promotions jobs and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, that's all I see now. I feel like if I were to try to get in promotions, I feel like I'm too old because there's always just like hot chicks.
How old are you?
31.
No, we have dumb, dorky people that walk around our building that, no, believe me, you would be fine. It's a good way to get yourself into an actual studio and familiarize yourself with the equipment and kind of see what the inner workings of a radio station is like.
What's the average age, though, of a promotions person?
I don't know.
And the percentage of male to female.
I'll be honest with you. There are for like the hot station, because I work for Cox Media Group. So we have a cluster of stations, like the hot station, Hot 101.5. They have younger chicks. Yeah, 97X. We kind of have like, we have a dorky slow guy that's very tall named Ryan Hoppy. He works there.
Oh, sure. I know Ryan.
We also have, we have guys like in their mid-20s I don't think you're too old. There's board ops. Believe me, there's board ops that are in that building that are way older than you. So there's, it's never too late to get involved, I think.
I'm pretty sure I've annoyed John Brennan enough via email to the point where I'm completely banned from even bothering.
That's how I got my job, believe it or not. So when I found out that Mike was hiring, it was just an ad in All Access. And I was working in Cleveland, but I wasn't having fun. Radio was not fun anymore. It became one of those jobs where I'd get up and I'd go, man, I got to go to work this morning. And I know that sounds dumb because there's dudes that go out and lay brick. They're outside on roofs putting up shingles in the hot sun. And I'm complaining about going and sitting in an air-conditioned radio studio because I don't want to get yelled at for 3 hours. But it beat my love for radio out of me. Working in Cleveland for 5 years was tough. And I saw that Mike was hiring, and I would call John Brennan's desk every day at 2:30 because I knew they'd be on the air at 3. So I knew he was the program director, but he was also still the producer and on-air portion of the show. So I knew he'd be in that building from 3 to 7. So I would start calling at 2:30 every day, and I would leave voicemails, and I would call back and back and back. It finally took me contacting the guy that I used to intern for, Kid Chris, who had helped me get every radio job I've ever had, actually. He vouched for me with every single person. I said, hey, do you know a guy named Cowhead? And he goes, yeah, I know him from a long time ago. And he was able to put me in touch with Mike. And then from there, Mike and I talked. And then John brought me down. And John realized that I was a guy that was calling and harassing him every single day, 5 days a week, just calling and calling and calling, trying to get on that.
It's a line that you have to kind of tiptoe on,
yeah.
I think. Because you don't want to be a pest.
No.
But you want to be assertive.
Oh, I sent a... God, I forget what the writing was that I put on the cake. I could probably find it at some point. But I put a cake. I sent a cake. There was a radio station that I used to work for, and they had flipped formats. They had blown up the alternative rock station and made it like a soft AC station. And they also had a classic rock station. And they kind of switched the classic rock station to an alternative sound. So it was kind of – it was like – it was weird. You hear like Arctic Monkeys and then Guns N' Roses. It was a weird format, but I was like, hey, that's perfect. And they were looking for a morning guy. And the guys that had worked in mornings before, I actually worked with, and they had gone across town and left them high and dry. They had nobody to fill in for mornings. And so I sent them a cake the next day with my face on it saying it would be a miscake. Something dumb like that. I don't even remember the term, to not hire me. And I never heard back. And I was like, man, that's such a bummer. But I would have walked away from a decent paying job in Cleveland, Ohio, just to go do mornings in a small market. But it's creative things like that, harassing and pesting people to the point where they're like, all right, we'll have to bring this guy in eventually.
Yeah.
Being the hungriest guy in the building is what kind of gets you to move up.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's the motto I've taken. And the little success that I've had, very, very little.
It's hard in podcasting because there's so many other things that you have to compete with. Because anybody can – so you can have a great podcast, but how do you make it stand out from everybody else who has a podcast? It's very difficult, but the good ones actually do. When you like Mark Maron's WTF podcast is a really good podcast. It's a tough business, man. It's people's attention spans are short, so you have to try and catch them and grab them and hold on to them. That's a hard thing to do.
So this is a podcast, but it's also I'm hooked up with this Radio St. Pete thing, which is an online station. Mm-hmm. But I think eventually there's plans for it to go to FM, but it's going to be, I think, like a WMNF type of thing, like a community type of station. And that'd be great if I could do something like that, but I kind of want to be like real radio type of thing, like commercial. So that's what I'm gunning for.
I did back in 2009, I was working in promotions. I lost my radio job on the air, just budget cuts. There was a guy that would do it for free, and I was getting paid $212 every 2 weeks.
Wow.
That was too much. Yeah. At that time I was producing the morning show, so I would be in from 5 a.m. to about 11, and then I'd go back and do my own night show where it was just music and it would just be me playing dumb games, and I would do that from 6 to 10. And then there's nights where I would sleep at the radio station on the couch because why go home when you're getting off the air at 10 and then come back at 5? Like,
sure.
Why drive that hour, a half hour home, and then a half hour in the morning back? That's an hour drive where I could be sleeping.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was kind of my mentality was, hey, just kind of work at it. it's a grabby business because they don't see that. They go, well, we're paying you $212 a week. Who cares if you work 12 hours a day? You're not going to – there's a guy here that'll do it for free. See you, dude. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I was sleeping on the couch.
How did they even get away with that, though, doing it for free?
I mean, internships. I don't. It's not that easy anymore. Like, even at Cox, we wanted to hire interns, and they're like, you have to pay them. And we're I can't go and be like, hey, we need a street guy. Well, then they'll turn around and go – well, why don't one of you guys go out and do it? And right. I'm a terrible street person. I don't like me being uncomfortable or making other people uncomfortable. It's not fun for me.
I like making other people uncomfortable, but not a big fan of doing this. Like, we do the open mic, and John Jacobs, me and John do the one on Thursday. And he's like, come on, let's go out and, like, grab people off the street. And, like, he's really high energy.
Yeah.
I am not that guy at all. So I'm like, I'll stay here and set everything up. You go do that, and then I'll see you back here. He's like, all right, man. And then he goes and pulls people off the street. It's amazing. But it's different skill sets.
I used to have to go to conventions and ask the crummy questions. Like, I asked Ernest Borgnine why did McHale's Navy discriminate against gay people. Just a dumb, like, I used a bad word for gay people that I would never use now. But I was, like, 19, and I was like, okay, well, they're writing it for me. I'll go and do this. That's fine. And I hated it. I hated every second of going up and knowing I was going to say something that really was just dumb and not even funny just to get a bad reaction out of people. That was a but there were people that liked that. It worked on the radio. Uncomfortable radio is fun to listen to, but it's awful to be a part of. It is not fun. And I've been a part of a lot of uncomfortable radio in the 12 years I've been doing this.
Yeah, I actually had a kind of an experience like that your boss, Mike, was doing a competition to get Tuttle's job, which was this guy that was working with him. So I had the bright idea of Charlie Belcher was doing a live broadcast from right down here. Is it the Vinoy? I believe so. It's like right down the road from me.
Okay.
And so I figured what I would do is crash the shot, right? And, you know, yell the Mike Halter, woo, Mike Halter show. And then, you know, I knew that he was a friend of the show. So my reasoning was, well, they're either going to be like, haha, that's hilarious, or they're going to be like, this is our friend, why would you do that?
Yeah.
And it was the second. So I had to call in later in the day and talk to him on the air about it, and it was pretty humiliating. I have it on YouTube still.
Oh, like, that's good. I'll have to go watch it.
It's brutal.
Yeah,
like, I look back on it now, I'm just like, But, you know, I was trying something, and, you know, sometimes it doesn't pay off.
Yeah, it's funny because I am new to the area. I've only been here for about a year and a half working here. I don't know that – I know that there's a history of the show because it's been on in this form for a long time with Mike and Galvin as host and co-host for 7-8 years. And Carmen and Spanish have been there for 5 years. So there's a whole 4 years before I was here that this show existed. So there's a history. And it's funny now getting into comedy, I'm starting to run into people who we may not have had the best relationships with. There was one comedian that I don't remember his name. And I don't mean that in like a bad way. It slipped my mind right now. But he and Mike had a falling out, and I guess we were involved with a comedy promotion with a club that he was performing at, and we started going back and forth.
Is this an older fella?
Yes.
Artie?
No. That was when Gallagher came in, which I was also not aware of. I booked Gallagher not knowing that he was coming in with a comedian that Mike did not like, and it turned into a nasty thing. It's to me, it's like, well, somebody should have told me, I guess. I don't know who should. I'm the executive producer. I should know these things, but I can't know 4 years of what happened before I existed here. So but it's funny coming into stories like that and hearing stories of how sometimes things don't go so well.
Yes. And that happens quite a bit. But you got into comedy. Did you do comedy up in New Jersey?
No, I did in college one time. I went to they did a talent show. And then I came in like fourth place, and I lost to a guy that was like with a ventriloquist, and he was a bad ventriloquist. Like, you could see his mouth moving, and at points the puppet's mouth wasn't even moving. And I go, he's going to beat me. And he did. Like, he came in like second.
Was it funny, though, at least?
No. My first joke, I remember it was just about how Colin.
No, I mean the ventriloquist guy.
Oh, no. No. It was just that he had gone through the act of he looked like the dummy. Yeah. So it looked like a weird. Just a weird scene that people were like, what is that? And then they were like, oh, okay. But my jokes weren't any funnier. And I did that once, and they Caroline's Comedy Club in New York, it was one of those things where they were like, hey, if you can bring 30 people, you can perform on a Wednesday at 4:30 in the afternoon.
Sure, sure.
And I was like, oh, my God. But I couldn't do
this.
Like,
is it.
Nope. And then, like, immediately, like a week and a half later, I had gotten the internship with the Kid Chris Show. And then from there, I'm like, all right, radio, radio, radio. I wanted to start doing it in Cleveland, Ohio, but it was one of those environments where the guys that I worked for would have just ragged on it because – that gives you better content than selling it. Like, there's no real content on our show about my stand-up. I might get a plug at the end of the show. Mike might ask, how was the show this weekend or whatever. But outside of that, it's never, like, me talking about comedy for 25 minutes. But if it's bad and you can turn – if even if it's not bad and it's funny, but you go in and you can twist it and go, hey, it's terrible, and you can spend 25 minutes ragging on somebody for it, that's content. And so – I wanted to do it in Cleveland, but it wasn't the right environment. I came down here, and it took me about a year and a half until I started going to some open mics, thanks to Steve Miller. He said, hey, come out to the Dunedin Brewery, which was it's hosted by John J.
Sure.
Murray.
Yep.
And it's like a cool little open mic. And so I went 1 week with Steve, and then he was like, hey, next week you should go up and do this. And I was like, okay, I guess. And I went to some place called, like, the Tiki Grass Cafe or something right here in St. Pete.
Bula?
No. It was a different one, like Sawgrass Tiki Hut or something.
Oh, yes.
But it was, like, a music one, and I didn't know. And there were a couple of people doing stand-up there. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to go to this one. I don't want to go make a fool out of myself in front of Steve when I go to the Dunedin Brewery the following week. So I'll go to this one. And I went, and I was terrible. And I still am terrible, believe me. It's not any better, but it's at least now kind of focused more. I went back. I film everyone that I do, and you can see just a weird guy that's uncomfortable. And now at least I kind of look comfortable. I'm not by any means, but I kind of look it. And I guess that kind of helps make other people comfortable. And so it starts to make me a little bit better.
I'm a huge believer in the fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
That is.
Does it work for you?
It works for me, man.
Yeah?
I have no idea what I'm doing. Like I said, I have very little success, but the part that I do is just – really being a pest and
yeah.
just acting like I know what I'm doing.
Well, so how long have you been doing stand-up for?
Well, I haven't even done stand-up in probably like 6 months,
okay.
I would say. I think the last one I did was at Wicked Witches.
I'm new to this, to
Cigar
be honest
City's show they had up in South Tampa.
Okay.
I think that was the last time I did stand-up. I'm more focused on this, and I love comedy, so mm-hmm. I'm trying to get shows and have open mics for other comics. I like hanging out with comics, and
yeah.
so that's kind of the reason. And also it helps promotion for this show. So I got it. When I first started, I was 18,
mm-hmm.
and I'm 31 now. I did Coconuts, which is now Two Palms, I believe.
Okay.
And it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I've only heard one person that's come through here, one comic, say, yeah, I did great, and that was Cam Bertrand. He got offered a show, like, right after he got off stage.
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
He's a funny dude.
He's hilarious. I love him so much. And he's very wise for his age, too. He's young, but he's can hang.
Yeah.
You know, you can actually have a conversation with him, which mm-hmm. is rare. But so your first time was down here?
Yeah. The first time going, hey, I'm going to try and do
this. Oh, that was at the Tiki.
Tiki and then
Sawgrass,
Tiki Dunedin Lounge. Brewery. And then just, you know, I was going up and doing the same. I mean, even now, I still really don't have that. I've only been doing it for about 5 months. I've had a lot of, I have a lot of stuff written, but it's weird to try and get. Now that I found a few things at work, it almost becomes like if I go to an open mic, I don't want to get uncomfortable and test this new stuff, which is a terrible method to have because then you're never going to try that stuff out. I have so much written, and it's just that fear of getting up there still and having nobody laugh, even though I know nobody is going there laughing. There's a lot of comedians that are there who are in their own head of thinking about what they're going to do when they get up there, so they're not really paying attention. There's really, a lot of times, not anybody else in the establishment, so there's not a lot of people to laugh, and you don't know. And it's terrifying. Even to go to open mics, it almost makes me feel more uncomfortable to go to those than to do, like, a little show or anything.
Oh, dude, doing an open mic is way worse than doing a show. Doing a show, you're coming into it with, there's people there to see the show.
Yep, they're there
to laugh. In the mood to laugh. Mm-hmm. They're going to be more gracious with you. At an open mic, it's, like you said, a lot of comics that don't laugh. It's nothing personal.
I don't blame them. I'm laughing when I'm done, but if I'm 9 or 10 on the list, I'm silent for those first 8 comedians because I'm in my head going, I'm very regimented still because it's It's like a script almost. And I'm slowly starting to pull back. You would think being on the radio for 12 years would make you be able to ad lib more, but it's different when you have to look at the people.
Yeah,
it's a whole different ball game. And so I get up there and it's not talking to no one. It's talking to all these people that I can look at them. And if they're not laughing, then I'm going, oh no, what is happening here? So open mics are awful. The shows are fun. But even then, the days leading up, it's just so nerve-wracking. Like, I did side splitters a few times, and every time before, I won't have a drink. I won't do any, like, I will wake up and just practice my routine over my head, and I go, this is insanity. Who does this? And I'm for free. I'm going and doing this stuff for free. And I'm like, what is wrong with me? And what's wrong with all these people who also sign up to do it? I wonder if it's that terrible for them as well.
Yes, absolutely. Dude, I know it's a lot of people like are misfits, the comics that are around here. There's only like a few cool guys who I consider cool. Like Law Smith is a cool guy.
Yeah, I had never got to have a conversation with him, but I've seen him perform, and it's very funny.
You could tell like in high school he was like one of the cool dudes that like hung out. But most of them are misfits, like, you know, and they don't have any social skills whatsoever for the most part.
Oh, man, I think that most people – whomever knows if I'm on the radio or not whenever I go to these places, because I don't go there and say it, and I prefer if it doesn't, because I would rather be the guy that gets up there and it's funny and then they're like, hey, I think he's on the radio, like later on, than be the guy that's on the radio and have this expectation. Not that there is that big of an expectation, believe me. But it is – it's a – sorry, I totally forgot where I was going with this. I'm sorry. Where were we?
I never know either, Rob. Rob Gargiulo is here today on the Homemade Broadcast on Radio St. Pete. So we were talking about people that do comedy.
Oh, yeah.
So what was it that got you excited about? Is it just like, hey, I like to make people laugh? Or is it – because I think it's some of that for a lot of people, but I think they also use it as a therapy.
No.
What I was saying, like kind of a cool guy.
Yeah. What I was saying earlier was that I'm sorry. That's where I got lost, because I am socially disabled. I'm not able to have conversations with people. So when I go to bars, it's very like it is nerve wracking to go and talk to people. And that's a weird thing, because my job is basically I get paid to talk. I mean, I'm not a paid co-host. I'm a producer. I'm a behind the scenes guy. But I have an open mic where I can Mike gives us carte blanche to say whatever we would like throughout the morning. Going out and meeting people is like a weird phobia for me. And the older I get, the worse it gets, which is weird. Like, it never used to be this bad. And the older I get, the more withdrawn I get and the less I'm out there wanting to have conversations with people. So it's weird to go and have that mentality and then get on stage and try and make people laugh. And I've noticed that a lot of other guys are kind of like that as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't – I kind of just went and I saw all these other guys being funny and I went – I kind of watched them go up there and bomb at these open mics, and like, but they didn't care. They were just kind of taking that risk. And seeing them go up there and be okay to take that risk to have nobody laugh made me go, well, I can try that too. I should try that and just get used to not hearing any laughter for a while. And then when you start to hear the laughter, then you're like, oh, that's cool. I would like to do this more. And then it becomes addicting, where it's like I get done the radio show at 10 o'clock and you know, I have production work and stuff, but I'm out of there at 11:30, 12 o'clock, and I'm at home writing jokes, or I'm at home practicing the jokes that I have written. So it becomes like an addiction. It's like something that it really is like a drug, because it's something you don't want to do. I don't want to do, but I feel compelled to keep doing it.
That's kind of how I feel about doing this. I like radio. I've always, ever since I was a kid, I used to play DJ, you know, and play my Space Jam soundtrack and announce the songs, and that's what I would do.
Yeah.
But I'm socially inept too. I've gotten a little better at it. Like, this is good practice doing it. But I have that problem too, where I actually have to go out and meet people. I don't know what to say to you. I don't know you.
It is very uncomfortable, because you don't know what kind of mood they're in. You don't know, like, the one thing I've learned through therapy, which I've gone to therapy, and therapy has helped me understand that everybody's coming into this day with different things going on. So I used to get obsessed that, like, I would say something wrong and then look like an idiot in front of people.
Yeah, I've had, man.
But has it ever actually happened to you? Have you ever?
I mean, I've said things that I cringe about now.
Yeah, but what did it, was it life-ending?
No,
and we in the time when it happens, I think we think it is. Like, this is the worst thing that could ever happen.
And actually, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Ahead.
But the time that the things that make me cringe are always times where I was like, hey, I'm ready to go. Like if you have some drinks, for instance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then you're ready to go. And that's a time where I was Ben's walking around.
Sorry, yeah.
That's okay. Rob Baugh's son, Ben. And Ben, what are you doing, man? You want to come talk on the microphone?
Can
no?
You sit down?
We're almost done, Ben. We'll be out of here shortly.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
So the times that I have said stuff that's made me cringe is when I was drunk and having a good time.
Yeah,
when
but then other people aren't going to remember that. I know that you wake up the next day going, oh, I can't believe I said that, but else was probably drunk.
People remember
that. Then it was that bad.
I'll tell you what it is, the thing that's coming to my mind. I have a good friend of mine whose parents I'm really close with. And basically the gist was I had two bottles of wine in probably an hour and a half.
Okay.
I was just drinking out
of
the bottle.
That's not...
they were a family of VW drivers, and they were just talking about, oh, I love VWs. They're just the best. And then I asked the mother if it soaked her panties, pretty much. And even after I said it, I was like, ooh, when I was drunk. And then they were kind of like, kind of just looked at me, and I was just like, whoops, shouldn't have probably said that.
Yeah, that the weirdest part for that story for me is that I've been on this kick where I want a VW bus. Were they talking about the VW buses or just like Volkswagen bugs?
No, like Passats.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I want like
Jettas.
Then never mind, because I want to get one of those old school buses and use that to go. We're surfers. I grew up at the beach, and there's no surf on the West Coast here. So
sure,
I would like to get a VW bus and be able to drive over there. But that's I wouldn't ask my friend's mom if that made her moist.
And luckily, she's a good sport, and she's known me for a long time, so she kind of just shrugged it off. But that's still one of those things when it gets brought up, I'm just like, oh. God.
Yeah, we wrote a song because Tom Green was big when we were in like 7th and 8th
grade.
Sure,
I love Tom.
And we wrote a song about it was pretty bad. It was a lot of explicit things with girls doing things to other girls that may or may not have been related to one another. But it was just like a joke. It was all the people from our school, and my friend Vince, who is still one of my best friends to this day, left it in his pants pocket, and his mom went to wash his pants and pulled it out, because back then it wasn't digital. We would write everything down on pieces of paper, and his mom opened it up and was disgusted. I had to go to his mom's house and apologize for writing such vile stuff, because he totally pinned it on me. He was like, oh, Rob wrote that by himself. And I was like, we wrote that together, Vince. But that, yeah, I understand.
Was it in his handwriting or your handwriting?
No, probably. I'm dumb. I don't think things out like that. Like, I don't think, hey, if I'm going to get busted, it better not be in my handwriting.
Yeah, you
don't think
your boy's going to, you know, rat you out.
No, but also, a lot of people think three steps ahead. I don't ever think that way. So,
seat of your pants type of guy. I hear you. So what's been, you've only been doing comedy, what, like 5 months, you said?
Yeah, December 16th, 2015. I know it by heart because it meant a lot to get up there and do that. I was looking for something. I wanted to find something, a different outlet besides radio. I like radio. Radio is fun, but my job on the radio isn't to be funny. It's to produce. It's to make sure the guy that I'm working for has what he needs. He has the information that he needs. I'm not there to crack jokes. So it's fun to go out there and kind of be the guy that can do that too. I like it. It's a fun thing to do when it goes well. It's a terrible thing to be doing when it doesn't.
Let's say something happened where you got the opportunity to go tour.
Yeah.
So what would you do in a situation where you have to be there for your
job? Oh, I am so not. I'm not even close to being ready for that. But
I know.
Yeah.
Theoretically here.
No, radio is my bread and butter. I think that's always going to. Radio comes first. I've been lucky enough that realistically our jobs get us up at. I have to get up and be out of the house by about 4:45 to be able to make sure that we have everything ready that we need for the show. And that's really the latest that I've ever woken up. When I was driving to Philadelphia every morning for my internship, it was an hour and a half drive. I would get up at 2:30 in the morning and drive up there. So it's you have to, you know, I'm at the point where I can get up at 4:45 and I can go in and I know where. I pull my audio the night before. I have Adobe at home, so I'll work from home. I'll get everything compiled. I'll email it to myself. But some nights I'm at open mics and I can't pull audio. And my job is to make sure that the guy that I'm working for has audio. At 6 a.m., he opens up his folder and goes, okay, I need this audio. If I don't have that there, I'm not doing my job, and the stand-up is taken away from the job that I'm getting paid for, and that's not cool. And so I've made sure that if I go up, like Coconuts is great because it's right down the road from my house. It's I can get up at 8. It starts at like 8:30, get there at 8, sign up on the list, watch a few guys, go up, do my stuff, be home and at home at 9 o'clock and be able to do my prep.
Right.
But radio will always come first. The stand-up's just something fun to kind of experiment with and try and learn. I'm reading more about it. I'm reading Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up. I'm studying more. I'm watching more things on Netflix. I'm trying to expand my
horizons.
Watching
my specials?
I watched John Mulaney's special. I thought that was very funny. I've never been a big – it's weird. I never was a big stand-up comedy fan, but then I watched Eddie Murphy's Raw. Like, I went back and started watching these things, and it's an art, man. You have to – I don't think until you do it you can really appreciate how difficult it is to go up there and be that person. But just imagine being Eddie Murphy and standing on that stage in front of all of those people, and they're all there just – hanging on your every word, and just you. It's not a band. There's no, exactly. There's nobody else playing instruments.
Say that all the time.
It's not ballet where there's other people. It's just you, and it's the pressure's on you. And if you go out there with the wrong mentality, or you're not there, I don't know how. Like, I see guys like that have said they. I listen to Opie and Jimmy a lot, and they have guys on that'll say that they, you know, they drink before they go on. They'll have a beer or two. And in my head, like, I can't do it for days because I want to have a clear mind when I'm up there. But there's guys that can do that, and it's flawless, and you couldn't even tell. And I go, that's swagger, man. That's something to be impressed by. Like, that takes years to get to, and that's an awesome thing to be able to have.
Yeah, I'll have that. Like, I'm good at a certain level with alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like, I get into a money zone.
Yeah.
But it's such a small section where I'm good. If I go too far, then I'm asking my friend's mom if car's getting moist. Yeah. And then too little, I'm just the same. So, you know, it just depends. And you can have like a sip more than what you should have, and then it all goes downhill.
Yep, goodbye.
But then as soon as I get, I think the last time I did at Wicked Witches, didn't have any beers. And then as soon as I was done, I drank my head
off. I'm interested to hear what your process is when you do write stuff and you go out and perform it. Do you write it in a notepad? Do you write it on your phone? Like, I'm very interested in how people get to the point where they're telling jokes in front of other people.
I never did the phone thing, but I'm not really a techie guy to begin with. As you can tell, this is very rigged together.
Yeah,
you know?
It works.
It works.
It sounds good. Yeah. I listened to Zach Townsend.
Oh, yeah.
I listened to the one that you guys did, and I was like, that sounds like a really good quality. It actually sounds like you're in a studio. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's reassuring.
Don't pull the curtain back that you're in your living room.
Sure. I do that constantly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what I do is I don't do the phone thing. That's how most people do it.
Yeah.
I carry around a little tiny notebook with me and a pen, and if I think of something, I write it down. And then usually if I was preparing last time, I just get a sheet of paper, and I go through the notebook. And because you're not going to remember it verbatim. I used to try to write it literally what I was going to say.
That's what I do now, man. I write like a script.
Do you have any success with that, though? Because I can never remember word for word.
So it'll start out. Right now, I wrote something that it's not unique at all. It's not very funny or creative yet. But it's all about how when guys fight, it turns into like the gayest activity ever. They're yelling about doing things to each other sexually. Like, you're going to do this to me. Like,
I'm going to F you.
Yeah,
in the
exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that just sounds weird to me that. And then so I'll write, like, right now I've written, it's about 3.5 minutes long. And by the time I take out all of the words that aren't necessary and then I try it out over the next month, by then it'll be about 1.5 minutes, maybe 1:15. But I like that process. I've learned how to start whittling things down. And I think it's tough because you memorize so much at first to go out there and test it out in front of people. I do right now. That's my process, is to memorize that 4 minutes, and then I'm going out and I'm cutting it down to 1:30. Well, I just wasted weeks learning 2.5 minutes that I cut out, but that's how you get something that gets laughs.
Yeah, but that's how – I mean, it's never going to – even comics that do like a special or whatever that have their hour down, they're always a little different. They're never usually exactly the same.
Yeah.
They're always just going to be little nuances. You'll think of something that's better than what you wrote, and then you throw that in instead. I guess that's the thing with recording. That's why recording is good.
Yeah, it's weird. I record everything that I do, and I go to drastic measures to make sure that I do. Like, my stand broke. I bought a stand for my iPhone, and it's not even the best lighting. It's terrible lighting. But I wanted to be able to go back and watch all of them. And the stand broke, and I overnighted one for like an extra $30 just to make sure I had it so I could go and film an open mic that I still won't go back and watch. I won't even watch the things that I film because I get so freaked out about watching people not laugh or hearing people not laugh. It's hard, man. It's a tough thing to go up there and do. I respect the people that go out and do this night after night. I can't imagine how – Like, there's nights where it doesn't go well, and they're able to get back up the next night. Like, I'm lucky where I don't have to do this every night to make money. So if I have a bad show one night, I can go home and be like, well, screw this. I'm not going to do this for, like, 3 days. And then I just get very sad and depressed and I sit at home.
Yeah, there's very few of those guys that are actually making money at this. But I've seen in the past couple of years I've been running the Sly Bar mic, some of the people that have been coming in at the beginning, I was like, oof. But they've gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, in a short period of time. But they go. I mean, they hit 4 open mics a week. But, hey, we got to go already.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for having me. Sorry I did all the talking. I really would like to hear more about your process and stuff.
Well, if you come back again, absolutely. I have this extra time that I can do. But I know you got Ben. Ben, thanks for coming, man.
What do you say? Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, buddy. Rob, give out your social media where people can find you.
Go to robshow.com, R-O-B-B-S-H-O-W. I have some shows coming up. I'll be at Two Palms in June, and then Side Splitters, emceeing for Jim Florentine in the last week of June. So,
nice, dude.
Yeah. So go check out robshow.com, R-O-B-B-S-H-O-W, and the Mike Halta Show, weekday morning, 6 to 10 a.m. on 102.5 The Bone.
Give Mike my best.
I will. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Thanks,
this
buddy.
Was very cool.
We'll see you.
Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more. Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.